I have a man sitting right across from me right now who needs no introduction. He's a Cleveland boy from Parma, grew up here, and left when I was 17 years old. And I haven't seen him in 40-something years. And you know him through many, many songs on the radio as far as popular music, rock music, blues music. He is Neil Giraldo, and he's, of course, married to the beautiful Pat Benatar, who's a tremendous musician, too. And they are touring the country, and they've come this way. Take me to a baseball game.
I did that. Oh, we need to take you to a ball game. That's because, you know, I haven't seen you in 40 years. You look exactly the same.
Yeah,
in fact, you probably remember the same thing we ate when we met, too. You remember
actually,
that, right?
I do.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, let me tell you what it was.
I know what it was.
What was it?
You tell me.
It was that.
That's exactly right. It was good, too.
It was that first thing.
It was fantastic.
actually, Frankie made that pasta dinner. It was Sunday night. That was the last time I saw you.
That's right.
And Frank Amato, from the lead singer for Boku, he has Sunday night pasta night. And you guys actually call him Frankie Pasta.
I call him Macaroni, too, sometimes. ZD, I call him. I also call him, don't go to his house on a Sunday, because he'll stuff you for weeks.
You ain't kidding. You know? You want to gain some weight?
Go to Frankie's place.
Go to
Frankie's place.
So you were in groups with Frank. That's when I met you. Mm-hmm. And that was the last meal we had was Frank's Spaghetti on Lakeshore Boulevard.
Yeah, I'm still not hungry to this day from that. I'm just telling you.
So tell us, how's the tour going? How's everything going?
Oh, everything's good. You know, winding down. I think we got six more dates or five more dates, something like that. Be going for about 2.5 months or so.
And who have you been playing with?
We have Toto on the bill. We've had them. Yesterday was the last gig we did in New Jersey with them. And then we had some with my buddy Rick Springfield earlier on. That was good, too.
Dr. Noah, what is it?
Well, you know what I tell him? This is what I tell him. I said, Rick, put the guitar down. You're a good-looking guy. You don't need to do put it down. You know, just do that. You don't need to do that. I mean, I wouldn't do it if I was him.
Well, he's very talented. I mean, I think people get confused about Rick Springfield when they think of, oh, well, he was this really good-looking guy who was in a soap opera, actor, musician, but he really is a great musician, isn't
he? Yeah, he's a great writer, too. Jesse's Girl was a great song.
You played on. You played guitars and bass on Jesse's Girl. How did you get involved with doing that?
I was making a record. I think I was either finishing Crimes. Oh, I was done with Crimes of Passion, making that.
Which is your second
one, yeah.
Benatar album?
Yeah, one of those. And then the producer that I was working with, Keith Olsen, said, let's go out. You know, Rick called. He wants me to produce his record. Why don't we do it together? I said, sure, I'll do it together with you. So we did it together. And the rest is kind of history, as they say. I mean, it was a great song. I knew it was going to be a hit when I heard it. It just needed more swing to it. It's very stiff. The demo was very stiff. It didn't really kind of go where it was supposed to go. But the song, essentially, was as a pop song, was a great little song.
So how do you do that? Like, I mean, I want to go in the studio. I know how to do that. But when someone offers you a song and says, go ahead, you know, add to my palette of my painting. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, I prefer to write it myself, to tell you the truth. But if I'm doing that, oddly, I hear it completed immediately. I know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, me too. When somebody else has got an idea and they want to put your idea in with it, what's the fine line that you go to?
The first thing I tell them is that I'm going to totally dismantle that song. I'm going to rip it to pieces. You know, because the I Ching, which you know I'm familiar with, has a saying and it says, in order for something to expand, you must compress it fully. So once it's compressed fully, you can now expand it, and that's what I do. I tear it to pieces, then bring it back to life that way.
Cool.
That's the best way.
Hey, Steve, can you bring that music down just a hair? Thanks. Yeah, so it was always interesting, because I've been called in for sessions, too, and you're trying to, you know, please the person that wants you to do it, and then you finally go, look, this is me. What do you want from me?
Well, it depends on what your role is. Most of the time I go in as like a producer, so that gives me the freedom to kind of do what I please with it. But there's many great, great musicians, great guitar players, like Steve Lukather with Toto's, phenomenal player. Okay, fantastic. I love to use the word phenomenal, by the way. I'll use it quite a bit.
Phenomenal?
Yeah, I love that word. And he's a great player. But the difference between him and I is I can't play what he does, and he's very fluid. He does all this stuff. But what I do sounds like me. I can't get away from me. So if I'm doing something with somebody, they have to understand that they're going to get this sound because I can't do it any other way. And I learned that from Rick Derringer, who's one of a brilliant guitar player. And he had a rig, and I said, Rick, your rig sounds fantastic. Let me try plugging in and playing. So I tried playing my thing. I didn't sound anything like him. I can't. I just sound like me, for better or for worse. You know?
Well, it's interesting because Eric Carmen told me something a long time ago, which was, if you write a song or you want to play a song, mm-hmm. play it like your favorite person coming from yourself, and it'll sound original.
I can't go there. That doesn't work. It doesn't work. No matter what I do, it's just like, oh, geez, I wish I could sound like this guy. I wish I sound like Jeff Beck. I just can't.
Well, you know, I read something that you had said about how you approached learning music, mm-hmm. which is the way I was taught piano, which most classical musicians are taught in the correct way, mm-hmm. is that you said that you will not play another chord, something to the effect that you will not play something else until you can play those two chords the best that you possibly
can.
Three
chords. I said to myself, I could play three chords better than anyone else on this planet is where I want to begin. That's the most important thing to me, with the tone, everything about it. Now, I was just talking about tone the other day, and I was explaining that tone comes from your hands. You know, it goes through your bones. You play an acoustic guitar up in the air, and you so one sound, you put it next to your chest, it's another sound. There's cavities, there's things, you
right.
know. It's just all that stuff you take into account. So.
Right. I mean, the classical approach to that I was taught in the beginning was, if you can't play the first two measures, why would you even play the third?
Start small. Exactly right.
And I have my students, you know, I teach about 20 students a week, and they learn the pieces like, of course, I did too when I was little.
Sure.
And I'm sure if you've done this, you made these mistakes when you were starting out.
I still make mistakes. Dennis,
well, I mean, you know, approach mistakes.
Yeah, understood.
So when they, you know, they try to learn the whole song, I said, why did you go past the
You know what? Because they want to sound like that.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. I have my dentist, who's a phenomenal dentist, plays guitar, and then when you go to his office, the first thing it is, he comes in with the guitar. He goes, I just learned this new song, and he's playing it, you know, and I have to give him tips and little tricks he can use and things like that. But, you know, it's...
Does he do your teeth for free?
No, he charges me three times as much. He's not cheap, by the way.
I'm sure he's not. I'm sure he's not. So do people do that to you all the time? They're always like, hey, Neil, can you do this? Hey, Neil, can you listen to that?
Yeah, they do a lot. But it's all great. I'm involved with the Oakland School of the Arts in Oakland.
Yeah, I was going to touch on that.
Yeah, and I believe that...
Tell them what that is, because that's a beautiful thing.
It's a government-funded school in Oakland. And what it does, the best part about it is it takes children off the street. In order to go to the school, you have to audition. And many arts, it's about painting, drawing, music, acting, you know, it's everything. Yeah?
Sure.
And to me, it saves lives. And children's lives, children that were lost. And the reason I have a big heart for that is that I would very easily could have been one of them. Growing up in Cleveland, I grew up in a really rough part of town. I had a really tough time dealing with everything. I had all this neuroses, terrible. I had agoraphobia, claustrophobia. I was sick every day. I had to call my mother to bring me home from school. It was terrible, terrible, terrible. And when I see with these kids that if you could save a life by them having a talent that somebody can expose mm-hmm. and work with them, that to me is the greatest gift that you can give anybody, to me. And you save a life.
Absolutely.
And that's what's happening at the Oakland School of the Arts School. It's fantastic.
But you have to be talented to get into this.
You have to show a talent. Yes, you have to pass an audition of some kind. That's correct.
You can't just want to go because you want to go.
No, you can't. No, okay. you can't do that. And it was funny. I went to see the Cavs play the Warriors in Oakland there, and it was funny. And then halftime,
did you wear a Cavs shirt when you were there?
Oh man, absolutely. I'm not going. Yeah,
I love that.
I think I had a hat.
I love that commercial. And when the guy walks into town with the
everybody's looking at. Well, I have to. I got to support my hometown. You know that.
Of course.
And these children sang in the middle of in the halftime show, and I'm thinking, boy, they were awful good. And all of a sudden, over the PA said, That was the choir from the Oakland School of the Arts. I went, those are my kids. They're phenomenal. They were phenomenal.
That's great.
Yeah, there's that word again. Love that. Actually, I'm putting the choir on a song that I wrote with my daughter, and I'm super proud of, my youngest daughter, called Blood Moon. That's a phenomenal
song.
Yeah,
you tell me about Blood Moon.
So I used the choir, I'm going to film as well. I'm going to film it as well.
Yeah, bring that down so you can talk right into that. Yeah.
Right there. How's this? Is that better?
Nice.
I don't know how to work a microphone, I don't think. Is this better?
Right.
Is that working okay?
Yeah, you're doing
Steve, is that okay in there? All right, he says yes. So it's a great song. I'm really proud of the song. And I'm going to put the kids on it, but I'm going to also use it as a promotional. I'm going to film it, promotional use for OSA.
Okay.
You know, to get more support and, you know, things like that. Too.
Who funds the school?
It's government funded.
Government?
As well as donations. Actually, for my 60th birthday, these really sweet friends.
You're 60 years old.
I'm 62. I'll be 62.
I thought you were 48, man.
I feel like I'm 79. No, I should even be more than that. But these really good friends of mine donated funds for the studio to make it a bigger studio.
Uh-huh.
So I said, you sure you'll pay whatever it is? They said, yeah. So you got a new console there. I got a new selection of mics, mic pre's and stuff. So it's really cool. And they put it in my name, which was very kind of them.
Very cool. Let me ask you something about being married to an extremely talented musician.
Mm-hmm.
I call vocalists musicians too.
Sure, of course.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to the Dennis Lewin radio program. And my special guest is Neil Giraldo, who is from our town, who left, went on to do many great things, including marrying Pat Benatar and lots of great tunes and popular music and rock and blues. How do you guys compromise at certain points? I mean, when it gets tough.
Okay, let me correct one thing. I know you mentioned it a couple of times. You mentioned the marriage part of it. I think so many times what's overlooked, and that's kind of a first thing people talk about or want to talk about, I kind of put that out of my head. First of all,
just to interrupt one thing. The reason why I'm asking is it's the Robert Schumann and Clara Schumann.
Oh yeah, I understand.
Okay.
That's very good.
Okay.
I know where you're going. Yeah, that's a good way to go.
Yeah.
But you know, we started as musicians, and we discovered that we were each other's muse in the very beginning, and we were to create something that each one of us needed to have the other one be. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very, very powerful. And that was the original concept of everything. And just then the relationship followed and got into that as well. So it's the only thing we've ever known. So it's always been easy. The compass goes, I have a nonstop creative mind. It never stops. If I look at a color, if I look at it, anything I see, I'm constantly thinking, is it a song title? Is it a verse? Is it whatever? Is it a screenplay? Never, never stops. Patricia, on the other hand, slows her thing down and she gets more focused into like this life being what it is. I do the other thing. So when that creative process would happen, it didn't always go with, like, in other words, it wasn't always like, let me hear what you got. It's more like, get away. I don't want to hear it. You know, forget about it.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
I don't want to hear about it. Okay, just go away. You know, it's because it's nonstop. I mean, it just never stops.
Because I'm kind of relating the two stories, and they're two different, of course, genres. But, you know, Clara and Robert Schumann were very, like, you know, she almost let him do his thing, and then she played his thing, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
She probably played it better than he did because she was one of the premier players of all time. So, but it's an interesting and there's a lot of course, orchestral people from the Cleveland Orchestra and other symphony orchestras who get married, and they're like, they're equally as great, and it's like, hey, don't step over that line. Do you have a line with her?
Do I have a line? Not that I can even think of. No, I don't think so. No, I kind of...
So she can Jean-Michel Basquiat, like your Warhol that you painted, and he just walks over and starts painting over the top of it?
Yeah, well...
Because he used to do that, you know.
Yeah, well, let's see if I can phrase this. And this is really, this is for somebody that doesn't know the operations of how you make records and how a musical relationship exists. I'll give you an example of this. From day one, if I said, I think we should do this. This is how we have to approach it. This is how we have to do this. The answer was never no. It was always like, sure. So one great thing that Patricia does in that relationship like that is that she delegates. She knows where the delegation. She knows that's not her place where this creativity lies. It lies in something else. She knows her gift is her voice. She knows that's the primary thing. As far as all the other stuff that encompasses that part of it, she has an opinion, but it's she delegates. If I like it, if this is the direction I'm going, she's all for it.
Okay.
That's how it's always been.
But that's a really great thing to have, because there's a lot of people who want to be pianists, composers, sure, arrangers, managers. They want to do the whole thing. And you know what happens, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the end of it.
Totally. Now, you know, we split it between the personal life, which she would take care of, and I would take care of the studio and the recording part. Now, it's a brilliant way to get things completed in that creative form.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, tell me about Sound City. That was a magical place for you.
Sound City was an interesting place, yeah. It had a lot of history. There's a lot of music that went through that board. That
David Grohl made that.
Yeah, David Grohl made the movie. He bought the console. That was the whole idea.
Okay.
And he's a brilliant businessman, and he decided he'd buy the console, didn't do a movie about all the people that put sound through it.
A console, yeah, out there, by the way, is the recording board.
Yes.
Where you record,
sorry,
through, in case, yes, you, in case you didn't know.
Yeah, it is a
this
very
is
good
kind
one
of like musician lingo.
Yeah, sorry. Just like I just broke this little pink, what is this thing called? Paperclip or something.
That's
glitter.
Gonna, hey, listen,
glitter's all over my hands.
That's going to cost you two baseball games, man.
I'm telling you, well, you got that going. I'm going to be all pink. This is bad. I'm going to move this. Steve, why'd you put that here? I know it's like a little trick thing you did.
It's a trap.
That's okay. What was the question?
The question was, what's the score going to be on the game today? No, the question is that studio?
Oh, yes, studio.
I talked to a lot of people have been asking me. They saw my Facebook page. By the way, you have the record of likes and interest in a radio show on my show.
Really?
Yeah, really. And I put Beethoven and Mozart up there.
So. Well, let me just say, holy crap. Now, let me just talk about Dennis for a second here. Well, I guess I have to say this. This is important.
Okay.
Listening to your show, not only is it extremely educational, but it's really entertaining, because your stories of these composers and their lives are phenomenal. It's like listening to an audiobook.
Thanks, right? Thank you.
And it explores it. And the thing I want to make a comment on is this, for all the people listening out there that are maybe rock musicians, music lovers in that respect, classical music lovers as well, jazz lovers. Every musician basically is kind of has the same mentality. And when you hear these stories from these composers that you bring fluently out, and so people can understand it, I really relate to all the, and it's really nice to know that it exists. You know, it's not like a separate, you know, you don't classify classical music as one type and pop music as one and jazz one. I consider it a whole arena, a whole family of music all together, and you make that work.
Well, thanks.
By those stories.
And I have to tell you, it's an honor to have you listen to me all the time, and you, your wife and everybody. I mean, I don't do this for, I do, but people from the Cleveland Institute of Music, the orchestra, we live in one of the most cultured places in the country. I mean, I would put our university circle area up against anybody,
yeah,
in this country.
Boy.
Okay.
Boy.
And I know who listens to this radio program, and I know who listens to the show, and some of these people do not like me, okay, because I came out and I was very different.
Mm.
But that wasn't my point. My point was to bring people in.
Totally.
To listen to classical music who would never listen to it.
That's what I love the most. And the people don't know those stories. And when
they
I
don't
mention that, everybody,
it makes them human.
Totally.
You know?
I was shocked when I started hearing, and I've read a lot about composers, but not to the detail where you explore and bring that up. When I say that we're all arena of all these people together, those composers from the classical age and those things, those people you talk about, are unbelievable, phenomenal composers. I mean, when I listen to things I wrote and did, compared to that, I should be a carpenter. I listen to the stuff
you're showing me, this, and I go, holy cripe.
Let me add something here that David Dubal, who is a tremendous teacher at Juilliard School of Music, you probably know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to you about you with him. David Dubal, I know him. He comes to Cleveland. He was with Vladimir Horowitz for the last part of his mm-hmm. life, okay? And he told me something once. People say that they can write a symphony. I'm going to write a symphony. You can't write a symphony. You have to go to college to learn how to write a symphony because, you know, it's the form. There's a formation of it, how you do it. Development, recapitulation, you know, exposition. You have to know when. You can't draw it because it's a creative thing, but there is a structure to it.
Totally.
Now you, to disagree a little bit with you here, you do have that. You have the same ability that John Sibelius had, or the same ability that anybody had, but you didn't go to school to. He became this orchestrator of ideas, and being able to know the form of the symphony was able to. And you could have done the same thing.
I
think you could.
I could have. No,
I'm going to tell you why, because I'm going to blow your horn a little bit. Everybody who I talk to talks about your guitar playing says the same thing. You play a song inside of your solos. You don't play just a bunch of licks that go around a chord progression, which I do not like either.
Correct.
Sometimes when people say, hey, Dennis, take a solo, it's why you never really play jazz. I love jazz. Mm. Like to listen to it, and I love to hear somebody really great play it.
Sure.
But when I was young, they would start jamming it. I would go, and I would just sit down and go, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But mm-hmm. I would rather play something inside of some chord structure. And for you have the ability, now is this improvisation or is this like worked out a little bit? Because you do play a song inside of all of your solos, and it's incredible.
Well, here's the thing. Well, thank you. But here's the thought process that I've always had about that. Because I love to write songs, and melody is the most important thing to me.
Mm-hmm.
A song is the most important thing. Guitar, piano, drums, bass, everything. That's
you say guitar.
Yeah, I
do. It's
guitar, like, I don't know. It's always been guitar.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, so it's just
it's funny because everybody's like guitar.
No, guitar. I don't know. It's just the thing I say.
Now wait a minute. You were good friends with Glenn Campbell though.
Yeah. Glenn was a great guy.
So did you get that guitar from him?
No. I got Strummer. He called me Strummer.
Strummer.
Hey, Strummer. How are you? How you doing? I'd say, hey, Glenn, how's it going, man? Tell me something. You had all those brothers and sisters, and I said, and you had no electricity. How did that happen? Well, Daddy liked to do a lot of, mm-hmm. That's why he had so many brothers and sisters. So.
Didn't you say that he had a golf club in one hand and a guitar in the other hand?
No, he would travel, he would take his driver with him on the airplane. So, yeah, it was fantastic.
So back to your solo.
Yeah, solo. Okay, so if melody is the most important thing, and, you know, I've always written songs. I've written a lot of horrible songs, by the way, but I've written a lot of songs, and I love melody. So here was my concept and the thought. If there was going to be a break and the melody would stop, the voice would stop singing, I wanted to have another melody continue because I didn't want the person to be bored, the listener to be bored thinking, oh, what is this nonsense solo for 16 measures or something, come back. I just didn't want to do it. I wanted to make it melodic. So mm-hmm. what I would do is I would know the very first note I would play in the solo, and I know the note I'd come out on, and then I would just improvisation, just play it.
I'm a believer, and I've had arguments and discussions about this with people about improvisation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think improvisation really exists. I believe mistakes exist, but I mm-hmm. think everything that you're improvising on really is a basically stored sequence that you might have done 30, 40 years ago. They pop out at certain places at the right particular moment. What do you think?
Well, I guess I could say that. I like the mistake thing. I used to have a little saying that says, make mistakes sound great, and sometimes mistakes actually become great things.
Well, that's what I mean, because what happens is when you do make that mistake, that becomes, you go, wow, I really like that, because that's improvisation.
Well, that's true. But here,
I mean,
think of it.
Making a mistake is improvisation.
But this is how I think about it. Okay, so in the mornings, I love to write in the mornings, because I'm sort of not really there, so I follow the idea that when you write a song, it's coming from another place, you're just a conduit. And I truly believe that. So it should follow that method that if you go to play that solo and you want it to be melodic, if you can close your eyes and forget everything what's going on and let it come from another place,
mm-hmm.
But only knowing that the first note, or you know what you're going to do in the end notes, that's where the improvisation follows, I think. Well, it's just the word, too. So it doesn't really...
Yeah, improvising really on apply. A theme is basically, you know, you're taking the structure of something and you're going to variate it. You're going to bend it and do all kinds of things with it. As in cadenzas. That's what cadenzas sure. are, you know, during a concerto or something. But... we'll get back into this, but before we do that, yes. we're going to do something interesting. So yes. Neil has to ask a question so that people can win something here.
What are they going to win, Dennis, if they answer?
We're going to sell... No.
You're going to sell them? What
are
you
doing? We are going to... Steve, do we need to take a break at some point?
Not for a while.
Okay. Okay, we're going to... put out a gift certificate, and if you can guess this question, you will win a $25 gift certificate to the Lobster Pot. Wish wow. you were in town long enough to go there. You would. You
Is it
would,
good?
Yeah, you love it. You
yeah,
like Cleveland's
fish? Got some great restaurants now. I got it.
Do you like fish?
I do.
Yeah.
I like everything. I don't eat carbs no more because, you know, I've got to start getting myself looking like I did a couple
You're
years
skinny.
Ago.
You're skinny. Get out
well,
of here.
No, I'm not. I need to be thinner.
I'm still going to do 5 more pounds. But
no, you don't. You're crazy.
So anyway, so the the Lobster Pot is on the corner of Route 6 and 91, which is Somm Center Road. It's spectacular. I've been there several times, and I'm not saying it to you because they're on here. Go to the Lobster Pot and then put in Willoughby Hills, and you'll see there's already 20 pages on it. Tells you what their menu is, tells you their hours of operation. They have a huge parking lot, so it's very easy to get into. It's right on that corner where Spectators used to be, the Lobster Pot. So if you can guess Neil's question...
Now, where are the lobsters coming from? They're not coming from Lake Erie or the Cuyahoga River or anything. They don't hang down there with the carp or anything.
No, I think
they're coming from some other place. They're flying in on a private jet or
Frankie,
how are they getting here?
Frankie brings them over.
Does Frankie bring them in that chooch? I'm sure they're great.
Frankie Basta brings it over.
The boss. Oh, here's your question. Okay. You can stop a toothache by rubbing a piece of ice where? Okay, here's our number one. Behind your right ear. Number two, on the back of your hand. Number three, under your left armpit.
Now, this is for a $25 gift certificate to the Lobster Pot. If you can guess this, if you rub a piece of ice somewhere on your body and you have a bad toothache, from what it says, it will go away. Give them the options again.
Number one, behind your right ear. Number two, on the back of your hand. Number three, under your left armpit.
Either one of those three. The number here is 1-800-343-WCLV. That's 9258 in numbers. Again, if you rub an ice cube on this place in your body, your toothache will go away. It's for a $25 gift certificate to the Lobster Pot, which is 1-800-343-WCLV. And if you're calling in, hang on because I'll be answering phones pretty soon. Right now, we're going to play something that you recorded with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. You guys played with them, right?
Correct.
Tell us about that a little bit.
Well, yeah, we had an idea, and we've done it before with other orchestras. But I was never really crazy about the arrangements and the even though I work with the conductor, I work with the orchestrator to try to come up with things. But excuse me, I like to take a little more avant-garde approach. So this is sort of a benign look at the overture. It's a benign look at catalog songs that we have. And they were a great orchestra, and we're happy to do that. For the future, I'd like to do something and explore more avant-garde places where you wouldn't normally go. I would go differently. But
we'll come up with a really good arrangement.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, so we're gonna play this, but before one more time, if you rub an ice cube on a certain part of your body, your toothache will go away. One more time with those options.
Number one, behind your right ear. Number two, on the back of your hand. Number three, under your left armpit.
1-800-343-WCLV. That's 9258 in numbers. We're going to listen to an overture of Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo's music with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. Let's take a listen to this. Neil Giraldo and Pat Benatar's music. There was, of course, a medley. We Live for Love. You wrote that tune.
Mm-hmm.
That was your complete...
That was the first one. That was the very first thing that I did.
That's a great... I love that song.
Yeah, it was a little thing.
We
it was just a song.
That was, what, late 70s?
Yeah, it was the very first one. It was the second hit that we had. Yeah, Heartbreaker was first. That was number two. And I just want to mention the conductor was Arnie Roth. And
yeah, I'm sorry.
Arnie and Eric Roth did the charts too, and they're both very, very talented, great, great, great musicians, great people.
How do you feel when you hear like a symphonic orchestra playing your tunes that you wrote?
It's pretty cool. Yeah,
it's
a cool thing. Yeah, it's big. You know, I love the acoustic thing, especially when they did the kicks, and Promises of the Dark, Hells for Children, all those things. They just explode. You know, there's so many things you could do with a full orchestra. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And
I love it.
Especially, you're sitting there going, wow, whoever thought that it would ever be.
That's true. I thought about it when I first heard them rehearse. The first orchestra thing that we did, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, I was just sitting there going, holy cow, this is pretty, who would have thought coming out of, where
I know.
Pretty interesting.
If you just tuned in, you're sitting here with Neil Giraldo from Cleveland. Neil grew up in Parma, and he took off. He ended up playing with Rick Derringer, Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo.
Mm-hmm.
And then you went on and met Pat Benatar, and the rest is all history. So you guys had 12 albums, studio albums?
12, maybe more. I'm not sure. Yeah, maybe 12.
12.
You probably know more. You know everything, man.
No, no, nothing.
You know everything.
I know that. What kind of sauce was the spaghetti sauce that Frank cooked the last time I saw
it? Linguine and clams, probably.
Hey.
All right.
So tell us, like, what do you want to do now?
Well, I'm doing quite a lot of different things now.
Now, you're producing your daughter, right?
She's actually an actress. I just wrote a song with her just for some musical thing, because she's also a musician. She's a great songwriter, too. Boy, she's really super talented. So is my oldest daughter, too.
Does she have a place, a site that they can go look at?
Oh, yeah, Hannah Giraldo. Yeah, just go to Hannah Giraldo, and you'll see she's got all these clips, these acting things she's doing on it. And then the song that I wrote with her that we did together will be coming out shortly, probably in about 4 weeks.
It was my grandmother's name, Hannah.
Hannah.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah, with two N's or one N?
She perished in Auschwitz with my father's sister.
Oh, wow. Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
That's one of my favorite names. Yeah.
But that, you know, that's one thing. But what I'm actually doing is I started writing screenplays, I don't know, maybe about 4 or 5 years ago. Also working on a couple books, obviously writing music left and right, but I'm doing this really interesting project that I love. It's a holiday music record. Now, it's not a Christmas record, so, you know, because it encompasses all the emotions that go in to people during the months of November, October, November, December, or January 1st, when all of a sudden New Year's Day comes and your new life is going to start, you know, and you're going to make changes in your life and all those emotions that go on. You know, I'll have a Hanukkah song on there, I'll have some Christmas songs, I'll just have songs that have just encompassed that time of year. So it's not per se a holiday or Christmas record. And I'm calling all my buddies and all my friends to be on it. Like John Wade, I wrote a song with him that's phenomenal. My buddy Scott Kepler from the Del Lords,
right.
Dictators. Rick Springfield, I'm going to get Rick Derringer. I'm going to contact all kinds of people. So
how about Sammy?
Sammy Hager, I put Sammy on it. Yeah,
yeah, Sammy.
I can totally get Sam on there. He'll do it for sure, yeah.
Did he write that song, Stand Up and Shout?
I don't know.
Stand up and shout. It was in that movie.
I'm not sure. Did he do that? Did he record it?
I think
so.
I don't know if he recorded it. I think he wrote it or something.
He may have, yeah.
It sounds like him.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. Now, your daughter is... Does she have an album out yet? Or
No. Oh, I'm not even sure she's going to do that. Like I said, she's more of an actress. But she's a musician, too. I'm not discounting that fact. That just she's moving into the acting big time now. She's getting parts left and right now. So it's super cool.
All right, so now injuries. You just don't. Yes. You can turn that music off for us, Steve. We don't need it in the background. Thanks. So let's talk about injuries, because you injured your thumb.
Yes.
Many musicians, including myself, sometimes, you know, you don't tell anybody that my hand has been hurting for the last 6 months because I think I'm getting a little bit of arthritis in the middle one.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't say anything. No?
Right.
So there's many players out there who are hurting, and you hurt your thumb. So what's going on with that?
Well, hurt it only as an occupational situation from playing guitar, obviously, and piano and drums. All those instruments require your thumbs. Thumbs are really important. So I started.
Did you know
this.
That there was a time, and I'm not kidding, in history where you were not allowed to use your thumbs?
Really?
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you, thumbs are,
God.
Boy, when they hurt, they hurt.
People are so weird, man.
I know, man. We're all weird.
I'm sorry, you cannot use your thumbs.
No thumbs involved. It's funny, when you lose a function of a part of your body, you realize how much you really needed that. Thumbs are rough. And the right one, it's on my left hand. So when you play guitar, if you do octaves for piano or tenths,
mm-hmm.
I can't do tenths. Now if I do a tenth, it'll be it'll kill me right now. So I do some massaging. I've had PRP done to it, quite a few things. But it doesn't stop me, because if I'm on stage and I'm playing, I'm giving 111% all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do. I'm not going to... First, I do a couple things. I'm going to go a little different directions.
It's easy to tell. I mean, I see you doing that.
I just have to.
Yeah.
First of all, there's two things I do. Number one, when I'm on stage, I am a musician. That's what I'm there for, and I'm going to do the best I can and play as great as I can every single night. When I'm making records, writing songs, I never dumb down the audience. Never. I think they need to be challenged. I think the audience wants things to be different. They want things, and I based my whole career on writing and producing with that.
We were talking in the car that when you go to see a lot of these groups today, and there's so many like tribute bands that they want to sound exactly like those recordings because people want to go back to their, you know, to growing up. Their memories, okay? But the thing is that really what you want to hear? Or would you rather go hear these guys take those things and make them even greater than they were? But it just seems like everybody's is tracking nowadays, you know, for the most part.
Yeah. See, I think people have a love.
Which
to
means
go,
pre-recording, by the way.
That's right, pre-recording. People, I think, love to go back and have memories, you know, and I hear a lot of it with meet and greets, you know, but it brings me back to the memories. And I always tell them that, including your life, the greatest thing that you're going to do is going to be within the next minute after we talk.
Exactly.
It's only the future. That's all I care about. I don't care about the past. It's the same thing with an athlete. You're only as good as your last touchdown. You're only as good as your last hit, your last thing. And just from the pure fact of being on this planet and knowing what you're supposed to do, it would be insulting to not continue on and future yourself and do more things that could help people's lives. Because again, one of the most important things for me is hearing people say how their lives changed by listening to the music, things that we have done. I mean, to me, that's the whole purpose of what I'm here for.
Right.
You know.
Right. And I'm going to ask you the question that I've asked so many great classical players. So I'm going to ask a great rock player. If you never played in front of an audience ever again in your life, would you still play for yourself in your living room by yourself?
I would on piano. I don't think I would on guitar. I would continue to write songs on those instruments for sure.
So you wouldn't care if you never went in front of a crowd again and didn't play guitar for a huge audience or anything like that?
No, I thought you meant by myself. And
no, I'm saying, what if you never played?
Oh, in front of a crowd anymore.
In front of a crowd ever again, yeah.
Oh, I would still pick up the instrument, but not. I have a different feeling about piano for some reason because piano to me is an instrument. I tell every guitar player, I says the first thing they go, well, what should I do? I says you should learn how to play piano. Because it's the instrument that you can see, you can play melody in your right hand, you can accompany yourself, you can play everything. Where a guitar, you have to stop something at some point. You know, do 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 do, blang, blah blah blah.
Dizzy Gillespie, he said that to everybody.
Yeah.
You want to learn how to play the horn, learn how to play the piano.
You got
to
play piano. Yeah. Everybody,
especially if you want to get that good, you know, if you really want to get that deep,
you have to. So that's the instrument. Because here's the thing: you go to somebody's house and they got a piano, you could be able to play songs for people. You know, Christmas songs.
See me?
Mm-hmm.
I love to play for people, but if I never played in front of people ever again, I would still practice 3 hours a day for myself. I'm very selfish like that, and I just. One day what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually mic my entire place. When I play, I just record.
Oh, just what you're doing.
Just leave it on.
I was thinking about doing that with GoPros in my studio. But I'd have to forget that they're on or else I'd go crazy. But the songwriting thing is a way different. That's a way different thing. That to me is different than the actual playing. That to me is way, way more important to me. You know, I have, of the songs that were published that have been out, over 100 that I've written, I have hundreds of unfinished songs that I think are pretty good. I got to do something with them. So I think I'm one of those guys. I would just use the tool, whatever it is, to write the song.
Well, he's kind of like Prince's vault. He's got tons, right?
Tons. You know why? Because here's the thing: you start a song, and you go, and all of a sudden that one you're like a quarter way in, and then you go somewhere else. But you recorded that, and you start doing, or you write a line. You go, oh, that's kind of a cool line. Let me write a whole song around that line. So you kind of go through this. This is what used to drive Patricia nuts. You go through all these things. I start a song. I go, okay, here you go. Here's a verse. Here's some words. Here's the beginning of a chorus. Have fun. Okay, I'm sitting there. I go, wait, I got another idea. How about this? And then, wait a minute. You didn't even finish this one.
Yeah.
So imagine all those multiples. And the other thing, one more thing I'm going to say about this that's interesting, and this is only meant to help people that are listening if they want to be writers or whatever, is that when I listen back to a lot of these things that I have, I don't even realize it's me. When I listen, I go, who wrote that? Who's that guy? That was pretty cool. Who was that?
Right.
I don't even remember even doing it.
Even on like the Boku tunes, when I hear them, they still play some of them on the radio, and you hear it, and you're like, That was from a land a long time ago, far, far away.
Yeah.
And you don't even kind of remember playing any of
it. No, you don't. You kind of just like it because it comes from this other place somewhere.
I know. So you're going to finish this tour.
Uh-huh.
And then that's what I was going to ask you too. Is that just part of your life? Because look at Paul McCartney, okay? Mm-hmm. Paul McCartney needs to tour like I need another four holes in my head. The guy, I mean, the guy's toured the world 19,000 times.
Yes.
I would say at this particular point in music history, he's the king.
Even over
all classical players or jazz players, whatever. Not to say that he's not a virtuoso or anything
sure.
like that.
No, of course.
But Paul's the emperor. Okay?
Totally.
He's right
and Dennis
up there.
Brian Wilson's right there hanging
yeah.
around. Flagler.
Brian works in his court.
Yeah, totally. Totally. They're all in that
he's
same.
He's the court composer. Okay?
Yeah, they're all there.
But Paul's the emperor. Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
And for him to keep going on the road, and I'm going to ask you this, too. Is it because you have to? Do you have to go out there and you have to go play music? Because it seems to me that Paul McCartney, he just keeps doing it because it's kind of what he did when he was 14, 15 years old, and that's his life.
Well, first of all, number one, it's really fun to play the songs you wrote. I mean, it's really fun.
Yeah.
And the other thing is when you're playing live, you don't have to think about creating something from nothing. It's already done, so you could just be a player. I'm sure that's what Paul's doing. You know, he could play bass, he could play keyboards, he could play guitar. I'm just going to play the songs I run. And when I did see him, I thought about, holy crap, here's a guy that can pull out a sheet. He has 1,000 titles, can do any one of those 1,000 songs.
Right.
Which is remarkable. And the other thing, too, is, you know, if you have daughters, you got a big payroll, so you got to get out there and kind of keep you got to keep stirring up some money. But but aside from that, though, the playing part I really love. But you know, Patricia and I have been doing this for a long time, and we enjoy it. You know, but we're tired. You know, and I have other things that I put aside that I haven't done. That it's time for me to do those.
Right.
I'm gonna reach out and branch out and do other things. Some other players and just have some.
But it's not it's not an easy life because, you know, I did it, you know, not as extensive as you have, but I didn't like it. I don't really like traveling like that. It's not for me. It's like, but, you know, I see you guys and I see McCartney, I see all these people going out there and they just keep going and coming back and coming back, coming back. It's almost like it's a thing that you just, if you were just sitting around at home for too long, you say, I got to get out there and play.
Right. Well, playing live is a different thing. I mean, there is a feed that you get off the reaction from the people. You know, you can see their eyes. You know you're getting them.
Right.
That's an addictive thing. You know, that's a really good thing to do. I mean, but here's another thing. If I would just have an acoustic guitar and just go up there and play and sing songs, I'd be just as happy as just doing that. Too. It's if you notice what I'm trying to say is it all goes down to the song. It's not so much the the shredding, because I'm not a shredder, and I never could do that.
Yeah, you are.
No, I can't do that.
You're a chopper.
No,
maybe not a shredder. No, you got chops, man. Get out of here.
I don't really. I'm there, and whatever happens, happens. You know, I don't know. I don't. I'm not like that. I learned that from Rick. I learned a lot from Rick Derringer. He's a phenomenal player, musician. That guy is could play anything. Like. Spectacular.
Yeah, he was a child whiz.
Oh my God.
He was only like 15, 16 when he was doing that stuff.
Oh, he's stupid. Stupid. When he does that bluegrass thing, and I'm going, holy crap, this is phenomenal. When I joined the band, it was the most incredible day of my life joining that band.
Which brings us, because we got about 5 minutes left, which brings us back to this.
Yes.
Do you see problems in music today?
I see problems. You know, that's a good question. There is a problem. One problem that I see is that I just found out that I have a really good friend that worked at Gibson Guitars, and he was fired. And they let go 20, 30 people, and their explanation was that there's no interest in the guitar anymore. And they even shut down their bluegrass division.
Think about that.
Banjos. Ukuleles, mandolins, all that stuff. Okay, so the problem, and you know what they said? Because people can play it on a keyboard note and they can play any guitar part, any piano, any voice, anything like
sample.
That. And that, the sampling, and that's a sad thing.
Well, I know that the piano companies are also hurting because
yeah.
they can't. They build these pianos that are. You go in these stores and they're like, how much is that one? $167,000. How much right. is that one? $83,000. $65,000. They're beautiful. Look, I would take two of them if I could afford
sure,
it.
Of course.
But the thing is this. Not that many people could buy those instruments. And at some point, you know, it's business. It turns into a business.
A business. And that's the way they look at it. So that's the sad part. The interpretation of where music is, I mean, I understand that. You know, rock music was meant to piss off your parents, you know. And I get all that, how that. But a melody and a great song lasts and lives forever.
That's the key.
And that is the key.
And that's what we're missing today because
totally.
A lot of people say, you know, da-da-da-da-da. There's always going to be urban music like rap music. People say, I hate rap. Okay, rap is just another form of people dancing because girls like to dance and then the guys have to dance.
And also lyrically, when they're expressing, during that rap stuff, when they're expressing some really powerful statements of how they're living their lives, it's important.
Okay.
That's just like rock music too. That's totally... When that came about, I totally understand that.
Well, at least we get to go to a Cleveland Indians game.
We are. We're going to see the Tribe, and the Tribe's going to do some good stuff today. Yeah.
But, man, thanks for coming on, Neil. You know,
thanks
I love
for
you. I love you to death.
It was a pleasure.
You know, so great to see you, too. I haven't seen you in so long, and I hope
40 years.
You and our friendship gets stronger and stronger.
Yeah, if I see you again in 40 years, it'll be like 108 or something like that. Oh,
yeah.
No. Yeah, about that.
No, I'll be 98.
I'm older than you, so I'll be 100. Something like that. But I just want to tell everybody that I love your show. I listen to it when I'm home all the time on the road. It's difficult with time zones and stuff. I'm telling people all the time to listen because I tell people need to understand more about classical music because there's genius. There's so much genius.
It's where it all came from.
Oh my God! It's phenomenal. I'm going to end it with
that. And for you to be listening and all your friends and everything like that, that makes me feel great, man. So you have how many more gigs?
I think just maybe five or so.
Yeah,
maybe.
You're playing in Erie.
Erie's coming up. Chicago's coming up. Rhode Island and Connecticut. And I think that's it for this run.
How was the New York gig?
How you doing?
Hey, how you doing? Hey, did you have some pie there when you would get a piece of pie?
I did. I'm not eating the carbs, but, you know, I did. I had a couple slices with sausage. I'm sorry, I eat meat. I know you don't.
All right.
I should probably stop eating meat, too, but the sausage black olives are so good.
If you want to go and check Neil out, all you got to do is go to BenatarGiraldo.com. That's right, isn't it?
Yes. Or you can go to the Facebook. But now some people go to the wrong Neil Giraldo one. It's got to be the official Neil Giraldo.
Right, the official Neil Giraldo.
My little puppy.
Yeah, right.
My little dog.
That's E3?
What's E3?
Your dog?
No. 2E.
2E, 2E, right. 2E.
2E. Movie star dog.
Yeah, 2E is really cool. Cool looking dog. Or just put in Neil Giraldo, G-I-R-A-L-D-O, and you'll see 9,000 pages of all the things he's done.
People complain.
Watch the movie called Sound City, too, but with... He's in that movie where they talk about that famous recording studio. And it goes on and on, and I'll have Neil on again in the future. I hope you come on again.
We'll talk about the greats, and not me. We'll talk about great composers like, oh boy.
You did, didn't you do some research on Count Basie?
Oh, I love Count Basie.
Yeah, didn't you do something on him or something? You were doing some researching or something?
Well, no, I patterned a True Love record that I did off the Count Basie sound. Basically,
oh, okay.
That's what I did. And then there's a movie called The Last of the Blue Devils. The Last of the Blue Devils, yeah. That inspired me to do something. That's Count Basie going back and meeting Jay McShann and all these great players. Yeah. Big Joe Turner.
Cool. Very cool. All right, I'm going to let you go because you're going to go over there, and then I'll meet you over there after.
Yes, you will.
Okay. You want to take a break there, Steve?
Yes, I do.
Okay, well.